Oak session number 14898, reel 5.
Was there anything you'd like to add?
Well, there's just one thing that I should have mentioned. We were talking about boats crossing Rapido. The Rapido was very fast flowing, and there were about 12 men to a boat, and it was a job to stop the thing, a job to prevent us going down the stream with the current. And one individual by the name of Fred Gosling managed to get a pickaxe into the bank, which anchored the boats.
So he was using that as a sort of boat hook.
Exactly. And we managed to scramble out, and what happened then took place. We were in this green corn, and I well remember there the tops of the corn being shot off with machine gun fire, of course. Well, then, as I think I've mentioned, we went back across the river, and then came up again that the following night, and into this position on point 6-3, which was had been a German machine gun battalion headquarters before we took it over. And then we did this forward sweep, where unfortunately one Hubert Gingell, who I was at school with, caught a lump of shrapnel from friendly fire from the tank, which was in support of us, was wounded in the shoulder. Well, from then, after this forward sweep, we came back into our positions, which was a really honeycombed with caves on this point 6-3, which adjacent to us was battalion headquarters. However, from then on, things were fairly quiet. We were still getting shelled and mortared, and I can't exactly remember what interval of time there was when we put in a patrol went in. That was supposed to be led by our platoon commander, but in fact, in the main, it was led by a chap by the name of Corporal Smith. And they went into the outskirts of Casino to the Baron's Palace, and without meeting any opposition. And by then it was realized that the Germans had pulled back. Prior to that, I'd spent all night bringing up mortar ammunition with the thing was that I think the following day, if the Germans hadn't pulled back, we would have probably put in an assault across this ground. However, we were, I think that afternoon, as far as I can remember, we were all geared up, ready to go into the outskirts of the Casino, when suddenly we were all that was given to stop, you see. And we did almost an about turn and came out. And we marched back through one side of Mount Trocchio along Route 6 through American heavy guns that had been there since about February, I suppose, if not before. And it was rather like returning to the pavilion after making a century, with these Americans lining the road, applauding us, rushing out with bottles of water and so forth, cigarettes and what have you. And I suppose we came back to some very heavy American guns that night, and they'd had all their kit packed up, ready to move out, but they anything we wanted, they were only too glad to give it away. Cigarettes, chocolates and green shirts and goodness only knows what. And anyway, we bedded down in the ditches, and I don't know how long it was, I just got off to sleep, and suddenly these guns started to fire, and we were nearly lifted off the ground. And I have an idea that it was the colonel's voice asking us what their target was and what they were firing at, and the voice said, "We don't want to take this goddamn ammunition with us." And they were just blasting the stuff off. I must say at this point that going back to the Baron's palace, one of our fellows found some sugar in there. It had been used, the cellar had been used as sort of a QM store. And his brother-in-law was in another platoon, and he told him where he found his sugar. And the funny part was, when we got back to this position with these American guns, they decided to have the usual brew-up, and they called him over for a cup. And I could hear the voice say, "Go on, put plenty in, put plenty in." And it was immediately followed by a loud oath. The top and bottom of it, they must have taken about 50 weight of salt out with them instead of sugar.
Did you meet Americans before this occasion?
Oh, Americans were everywhere. They used to come round and got any souvenirs, got any Lugers. And, they were all right, I wouldn't say, but they were always on the lookout for souvenirs.
Do you know what caliber the guns were that you saw?
That I'm not sure. They were, I believe, that I'm not certain whether they were called Long Toms, I think. I'm not sure on that point.
Do you know whether they were dug in or not?
No, they were open. But the guns behind Mount Trocchio, I believe they were dug in, because I've become very friendly with a chap who was with the Duke of Lancaster's yeomanry. And I met one fellow who was with the FOO, who was down on, when they were trying to make Amazon Bridge. And I think the FOO was killed, and he took over the job himself as well as the Cigna. And Trocchio, I went back to the casino for the 45th anniversary, and this fellow from the Duke of Lancaster, he went back up onto Trocchio, which of course was a forward observation post for many, many batteries. And he said the place looked like a scrapyard up there, that everything had been, all sorts of rubbish had been dumped up there. Shame, really. And
Could I ask a bit more about Point 63?
Yeah.
You said you crossed the Garigliano in these 12-man assault craft, and the river was flowing very fast, and eventually you took or occupied Point 63, and you said
jumping ahead, most of that was covered on that other piece of I gave you, where we were in with the river at our backs, and we were being sniped at, bombs, shells, you name it. We were there for the best part of 2 to 3 days. And then we came out, and then went back in again, up to this Point 63.
You mentioned there were caves. Were these caves natural?
They'd been hacked out from somewhere or another. Quite what their original use was, whether the Germans had constructed them all, but it was an absolute rabbit warren of these places.
Were you able to make use of the positions there to defend your or did you?
Well, yes, they were made use of, there was this gap in between. In fact, I forget now what company actually captured the Point 63, but they were. I think the Beds and Hearts were on their left. That's from there. We did this forward sweep. It was sort of no one about at all there, really, as far as I could see.
Germans had pulled back.
They'd pulled back, yes. But we got into this barn place that I told you about. I think I mentioned before, and then. They were letting us have it. There was a pile of rubble where the wall had been, and they were firing in through the door, and there was some distance of about 600 yards, I would say, at a rough guess, and where we eventually got out from.
You mentioned that you went back to bring up mortar ammunition.
Well, I know. I was bringing it up from a position up to this point, where we were, you see. We were at more or less, the company was more or less in reserve, you see, at that point.
How far back did you have to go to get the mortar ammunition?
Oh, not far. It was just a good question of dragging up the distance of, 300 or 400 yards or something like that.
So you didn't have to cross the river?
No. Well, this position, you see, we were then, was about a mile and a half, I suppose, from the river, as far as I could work out, because the river bent round towards the town again, and we were followed back here somewhere.
You were in the loop?
Yeah.
How much mortar ammunition could you actually carry?
No, I can't remember. That was done on six bombs at a time.
Was this 3-inch mortar?
Yes, that's right. The other one was 2-inch. They were quite big. That's right, yeah. Two of the platoons carried the 2-inch mortar. Or each section, I think, carried a 2-inch mortar. I really forget now offhand. Yes, each. Yeah, and a piet. It's a wonder how we moved with all the crop we had to carry, and I think with a pickaxe, shovel, machete.
Did you manage to get rid of any surplus kit that you thought was completely useless?
Well, our kit bags. Goodness knows how far we dumped those. We had the kit. As soon as we got out of the line, our kit bags reappeared, and it wasn't until we got up to Rome that we finally got rid of those. And I can't remember where it was we saw them again. Probably Taranto or something like that, when we were ready to embark for Palestine. But of course that comes later.
What was any stuff discarded entirely? Did you throw anything away?
No, not really. Not as far as we were concerned, anyway. I was going to say, we sent this patrol in the morning, and later on, I was going to say, we heard loudspeakers going, announcing in German, telling them to pack in, that we'd take the place, and so forth. And then we came out.
Did you know why you were being pulled back?
The war, the Battle of Cassino had finished, and it had gone on towards the others had gone through on our left it was known as the Hitler Line, I think, originally, and then they changed the name to the Dora Line, which was an approach to Rome. But we came back from Cassino to Piedmonte d'Alifi, which is about 30 miles south of Cassino. And from there I went on leave to Bari, the 8th Army Rest Camp, which was, in my opinion, a bit of a waste of time. It was a bit of a rather boring, as far as I was concerned. It was had been an Italian army barracks of sorts. Or camp, and you could go into Bari, but there was very little to do. I suppose it must have been there for the best part of a week, during which time reinforcements had come up, many of them people I knew from our from the 4th Battalion days, and also, I think, as far as I can remember, a lot of them come from Somerset, and I suppose our casualties were probably greater than Somerset's, for the reason being.
What was the main cause of casualties? Was it shell fire or small arms or mines?
Well, a lot. Mm. yeah, as I suppose shell fire and small arms. I should say small arm fire probably more than anything. They were quite, it's difficult to say, 50-50 possibly.
Between small arms and shelling.
I would say more small arms. I know later on it was more small arms, definitely, than shelling. But when we got around to Lake Trasimena, we had that was a bit of a shocking view, that.
You say that you went off to Bari. Was that just you as a person, or the whole battalion?
Oh, no, just me and a few others, you see. There was very little to do there, really.
And where would you have liked to go if you'd had a choice? Would you have had any idea of what
you couldn't really. You didn't have much choice in the matter. There was only Naples, and that was a pretty grim place, really, in those days. Some did go back. I remember this friend of mine, Gingell, who was wounded at the casino, and it must have been before then, somewhere or another, he went back. He was lucky enough in the draw to draw a ticket to see Irving Berlin's production of This Is the Army, which of course was an American thing, but which I think was put on in the San Carlo Opera House, as far as I remember.
But you didn't have any opera or entertainment in.
Oh, we had ENSA shows coming up, and of course there was mobile cinemas as well. And I forget now what was the fill. He had to stop it. That was around Lake Trasimena. Very quickly we had this mobile cinema, but there was a plane flying around, and here and there were bursts of machine gun fire from it. So. The colonel thought it best to shut up shop.
were you aware of enemy aircraft overhead frequently?
No, very, very rarely at that time. When the bridge was, the Amazon Bridge was put over at Casino, it was only a matter, but they did. They sent about one plane over to try to dive bomb it, but I don't think they did any damage, not to the thing structurally anyway.
Did you see much friendly air forces?
Oh yes, well, not a great deal. I mean, say there was no. We saw that came later on. There was only one position being bombed there, I remember, and there was usually the artillery spotter. What's the name of the plane now? Alster, flying overhead. That's about the only thing we saw, really. A lot of stuff, although saying at Barry, across the other side of the road, there was a big American air base there, and they were doing a strategic bombing up in the north of Italy from there. In fact, I did hear of one or two instances with one or two chaps being able to scrounge a flight on one and back until someone got the hear of it and it was stopped very suddenly.
You mentioned reinforcements coming up, and some of them coming from the 4th Battalion, yeah. You've known, some from the Somerset. Roughly how long did it take them to be absorbed into the battalion?
Oh, a matter of days. I mean, say they were there. You were just bunged in. I mean, say that was it. You know, you go to that company, you go to this company, and that's how it was done.
But it didn't cause any difficulty, men from another regiment coming into the...
Well, no. I mean to say, they were all light infantry, and that was it. But later on, we were getting reinforcements, which were, they were all right, but they were coming in from sort of artillery units and like ACAC and all sorts of stuff like that, which they didn't know. Really, I mean, say that was just at the end. That was before the battalion came out. It didn't take them long to settle down.
But presumably, if they were coming in from light ACAC or other formations, they wouldn't really have the same training or experience.
Well, no, they wouldn't. No. But that didn't occur until I suppose October, November. And I didn't experience. I was in hospital myself at that time. Right.
So what happened to you then after Bari? Presumably you went back.
Well, I went back to Piedmonte de Lefi, and I hadn't been there. I suppose we were there out of the line completely about 3 weeks. And then we moved up through Cassino again to a town, I think, with Arche, which is, my Italian pronunciation is correct, which is towards, what, how far would it have been? 20 miles, maybe a bit more than that, above Cassino. And then it was decided to put in a, well, not an attack. They knew the Germans had been pulling back. And of course, by this time, the beach, they'd broken out from the beachhead and so forth, and that's when Mark Clark...
the Anzio beachhead.
Yes. Mark Clark had booed by not doing as he was instructed, to going for the Alban Hills to cut off the Germans' retreat, and of course he made for Rome. Of course, at that time we didn't know anything about this, and we got to this town, and there we stayed, well, 2 or 3 days, and then they decided to send off this well, you couldn't call it an attack. They went to the east of Rome and met very, very little opposition. I think they saw an SP gun once and fired a round at them, but it did give the chance for some of these reinforcements to come up to sort of get assimilated with the conditions. Well, then...
I was going to say, when the battalion was out of the line, what moved up to Arche... What was it actually doing day to day while it was out of the line?
What we were doing?
Yes.
Well, more or less resting, cleaning weapons, and you name it. not a lot to do.
I mean, how did they keep you occupied? Did they make you do foot drill, or was there?
Oh, there might have been a bit of that and a bit of PT and
refresher training.
Well, the only things that I shot when I was out the line was any Lugers or anything like that that I managed to get out of. But there was very little. I mean, say everyone took it easy and then tried to rest as much as they could.
What sort of accommodation did you have?
Bivouacs.
But I mean, this was... What time of year would that be?
Oh, that was June.
Oh, in June?
Yeah, you see... I think it was about May the 11th when the attack went in on Cassino, and that, for another 3 weeks after that, 3 or 4 weeks, well, yes, it would be early June.
So you're reasonably comfortable at that time of year?
Oh, yes, yes. Back into KD, and as I say, that I think we had our kit bags with us then, and... anyway, as I say, they moved off on this so-called attack, and I was left LOB, in other words, left out of battle, and to bring up the kit. And
did that mean you were with the B echelon?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know they moved off. And it must have been the following day, we decided to follow. We got out onto, I was in a truck, we got out onto Route 6, and it was an absolute traffic jam. And that was the day when D-Day started. And
it was 6th of June then.
6th of June, that's right. And the truck behind had a radio on, and... about every half an hour, it was you could hear the inter battle being played, and we all doubled back to hear what was going on, as none of this traffic was moving. If the Germans had any aircraft, they could have had a field day. And as I say, that we moved up towards Rome, and through, I remember, Valmontone, which was in a heck of a mess. And then what happened? Oh, I remember. Suddenly the down traffic cleared, and there was a wailing of sirens, and American motorcyclists armoured cars went, and Mark Clark went past. And shortly after that, I think I might have been asleep at the time, Alexander came past in the same direction, driving himself in a Jeep.
Was this the only time you saw Alexander?
That was the only time I saw him. I was going to say, and then the next interval, the break in the traffic, I remember General Freyberg was going up towards, complete with the New Zealand flag flying from his staff car.
How did you know it was Alexander? I mean, did you recognize?
Well, he was unmistakable, yes. And also, one we used to see, I saw him on several occasions, I forget my own name. Some commanding the 8th Army took over Montgomery.
Oliver Lees.
Yes, I saw him. I must say that he paid an informal visit to the battalion. We were all arranged in bundles of so many under in the olive grove, and he came up and everyone said, sit down. And he was accompanied by General Ward and Brigadier Shoesmith, the CO, and goodness knows who. And he spoke, well done sort of thing. And I remember he said, he suddenly said, any of you chaps want anything to say? And there was a fellow there, Bregan, the real barrow boy type of a, and he got up and in no uncertain manner or without any thought to his language as well, told him what he thought of it, you know. And I can remember all this entourage with General Rees, they all turned purple. And I can think it was General Moore. I come along and say, I think it's time we visited the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment. And he said, well, wait a minute, I want to hear what this chap has to say. And he was very, very, very good about it and sort of words to the effect, well, you must remember that an army commander can't see every detail what is happening in front of him and all the rest of it.
Was Bregan pacified by the reply?
Well, no, he had a good laugh about it afterwards. He's that sort of business. But, I don't think I would have cared to have. I couldn't have addressed the army commander in such language.
Did you see the brigadier frequently?
Oh, yes. That was the thing. You see, the brigadier and colonel, they were always around position, particularly earlier on, Mount Ornito. And so forth for Monte Belvedere. Brigadier Shoesmith was always at hand. And, the Colonel Musson, General Musson, as he now is, was always on hand somewhere or another.
So you're aware that they were
And I think that they were all most approachable for individuals as well.
You mean you could speak to them without formality?
Oh, yes, exactly, yeah.
What would Brigadier Shoesmith do when he visited you?
We saw him walking around the position, the static position, as Monte Belvedere and, not so much Malvateria, that was more exposed, I think, than the position we were in on Mount Ornito. Mount Ornito was a most terrible place, really, but we saw him, we saw him up there, sort of walking round as far as he could go around the position.
Would he turn up every day or once every two or three days, or roughly what sort of frequency?
I couldn't tell you that, but I suppose we saw him up there two or three times, maybe, in the question of about a fortnight and so forth. You didn't know quite where he was going to turn up.
Because he'd have had three battalions to look after.
Oh, exactly. Yes. And I met a major of the Duke of Lancaster's and so forth, and he used to come across Brigadier Shoesmith quite often, of course. Being an artillery man, I think that he was he would sort of, in one instance, he worked out the fire plan for them, and he was with General Ward, and on this particular occasion, General Ward was most irate situation, but there we are. That's another story.
When you were moving up, you went through Casino, you said.
Yes.
Does that mean you went through the town?
Well, Route 6 comes up, when you come up from the south, Route 6 goes up, and then you turn a sharp left, turning with monastery above. If you turn right, that took you into the town. But that was absolutely a shambles, the whole place was. I mean, say, Hitler was fascinated by, from what I've read, by Casino, because it was after the style of, it looked like France in the 1418 war. It was, really. I mean, say, to go back today, particularly the ground that we came across the river, you just couldn't recognise it. You don't, there's not anything to remind you of it. The monastery is completely rebuilt, and so is the town. You can see the, in various buildings, you can see the join, but it's been more or less, not completely replaced as it was. It's a fascinating place to wander around.
So you went up past Casino, and then you were left after battle for the...
That's right, the boss. Yeah.
How many of you were there who were left after battle on the occasion?
Oh, no, I couldn't tell you from the whole battalion, but I suppose there must have been about